This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, December 29th, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. The definitions of mental illnesses are intensely political within psychiatry. And since the government bestows benefits based on mental illness, the newest revision of the DSM has a whole other political dimension. Walter Olson, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, comments.
American Psychiatric Association is doing a huge revision of its so-called Bible of mental diagnoses, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which has been known as DSM-4, and it's going to be known as DSM-5 when they're done with the revision. And the definitions of mental disorders are going to be expanded so that it will be easier to diagnose a mental disorder with fewer symptoms, so that new disorders like Internet Addiction Syndrome, which have not been recognized, will emerge as recognized entities with medical significance and much more.
And this is a political document within the profession, just because certain things used to be there that aren't anymore.
It is a constant battleground, and a tug of war has gone on for many decades. Things have been taken out, such as homosexuality. Things have been controversial in both directions, and it is important as a practical level in all sorts of decisions about what will be paid for, and as we will see in the regulatory domain of who can sue who is entitled to what kind of benefits in the workplace.
All right. So we're talking about disabilities then.
We're talking about disabilities, and that plays out legally in several different ways. There is the well-known Americans with Disabilities Act. It may be that until up to now, an employer had a good case resisting accommodating someone's internet addiction syndrome. That may be harder once it's a recognized disorder. Likewise, it is important for a law like the Family and Medical Leave Act. If you have to take time off work to get rehab for your internet addiction, you may have a much better case now.
Years ago, with the Americans with Disabilities Act, we heard these oddball stories about alcoholic school bus drivers who, because they had begun seeking treatment, could not be fired.
And those are not just stories of the past. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, only within the last few months, sued a major trucking line, which was taking the view that it didn't want to put drivers behind the wheel of its big rigs if they had a serious drinking history. And the EEOC said, no. If they give you the paperwork that they're in a rehab program, you have to treat them just as if they'd never had an alcohol problem in the first place. And that seems somewhat crazy to the managers at the trucking company, and seems somewhat crazy to many of us on the outside. But to the EEOC, this is a discrimination matter, and it's just as invidious as if you were considering their race or their sex. The gradual progress of the ADA from something that was initially proposed with reference to traditional disabled groups like the blind and the deaf and those in wheelchairs to its eventual expansion to cover almost everything that can go wrong bodily or mentally or behaviorally with any of us, and provide some sort of protection for things that go wrong with people has been a step-by-step process. And for a long time, the courts resisted the idea of expanding it too broadly to disabilities that were either considered minor or were considered partially within people's control. The expansion of the DSM is just one more step, and not the biggest step, in the continual expansion of these laws to the point where employers are in danger of violating them every day without even knowing it. One of the most important steps was taken a few years ago when Congress passed the ADA Amendments Act, which reversed some Supreme Court decisions, which intended to limit what got counted as a disability. And Congress's view, and it was amazing how uncontroversial this was in Congress, at least. Congress's view is no. Let everyone in, even if the disability seems minor or is not a traditional disability, even if it's invisible. Let people claim protection, and we'll have the argument over whether the accommodation is reasonable or not. We'll argue downstream about whether the employer did enough, not about whether it was a disability or not. And once that battle was lost, the floodgates really did open. I mean, and now many more ADA claims are being pressed. But It's still worth watching the actions of the psychiatrists on this because it can serve as sort of a confirmation, an encouragement for people to take things that may be really at the borderline between a personality trait and a psychological disability. You know, how bad does laziness have to get before it becomes a psychological disability? How bad does, talk backativeness, and they've got actually some name for the syndrome of oppositional defiant syndrome or something like that, to refer to when teenage personalities become so argumentative that it's actually a syndrome and a disorder. But with the continual liberalization, the profession is kind of putting its stamp of approval on, let's make more and more of this into a recognized clinical entity and thus a recognized legal entity.
To some extent, then, the Congress is delegating some authority to this psychiatric association?
Very much so, and it's not as controversial in other areas because clearly when it comes to counting who is paraplegic or not, doctors get to make that determination and it has legal implications. But when you get into the mental and behavioral setting, when you get into the sorts of frailties that afflict everyone, and one of the areas that DSM is changing is mild cognitive deficit. Now, almost everyone who worries about getting old recognizes that as people get older, one of the things that so often hits them is mild cognitive deficit. And until we medicalized it, it was just considered part of life. Now that we are medicalizing it, the employer is being faced with yet a new twist on age discrimination law. They already knew that you couldn't look at the number of calendar years and make decisions based on that. But what if the person just seems to be in a gradual decline? Do they need accommodation now? Maybe they do, legally.
Walter Olson is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.